So good morning, everyone. My name is Avshara Menon. Great to see all of you here, especially on the last day of the conference. I'm a senior ORI fellow at the Public Health Law Program at the Office for State, Tribal, Local, and Territorial Support, OSTLTS, at the CDC. And I'm going to be talking about the work that we do in the area of prescription drug overdose laws. I have no personal financial relationships to disclose, and also being a lawyer, here's our disclaimer. Always seek the advice of an attorney or other qualified professional with any questions you may have regarding a legal matter. So today, what I'm going to be talking about, to start us off, is the public health problem, and then really the collaboration that we've been doing with the National Center for Injury Prevention and Control, or as I will call it, the Injury Center. So our work, Public Health Law Program, along with the Injury Center. And really, I want to dive into the state laws that we are finding in the area of prescription drug overdose. I'm going to try and highlight for you the different types of provisions you see, and then also really provide you with state examples of the different kinds of laws that we are seeing. And then to run it off, of course, the important topic of evaluation. What does this mean? What is the impact of these laws? So as most of you probably know, the CDC has declared a prescription drug abuse as an epidemic. And this is because of the widespread nature and the prevalence of the problem of abuse of prescription drugs, deaths related to prescription drug overdose, as well as overdoses themselves. So we use a lot of terms in this prescription drug overdose world. We talk about prescription drug abuse, we talk about misuse, we talk about divergence. So I wanted to clarify for you what these terms are all talking about. So drug misuse is when a person uses a prescription drug for a purpose other than what the drug was prescribed for. So this could be for using it for different amounts or for different goals, such as to get a high feeling or, you know, to alleviate pain. And then we've also got, in contrast to that, we've got drug abuse, which that is when you're addicted to the very effects of the, you know, prescription misuse that you're having. Then you've got diversion, which is when you're talking about the channels of use. So that's really when, for example, a patient goes to a doctor, gets a prescription, gets the meds, and then either gives them away or sells them to other people. So those are the different terms that we're talking about when we're talking about this area of prescription drug overdose. Now, just to give you some statistics, more than 41,000 people died of drug overdoses in 2011. And most of these deaths, about 22,810, were caused by overdoses involving prescription drugs. Three quarters of prescription drug overdose deaths in 2011, that's about 16,917 people, involved a prescription opioid pain reliever. Those are drugs which are derived from opium poppy or the synthetic version, things like oxycodone, methadone, hydrocodone. So this graph really illustrates the dramatic increase in overdose deaths related to OPRs since 1999. Now this slide here is to show you that in terms of looking at other causes of death in the United States, prescription opioid overdose is by far the biggest rate there. Look at it, 276%. I mean, motor vehicle deaths was the highest in 2008, and we've far surpass that now. Now, this slide is to give you a sense that different populations are at different risks for prescription drug overdose, and middle-aged adults are the greatest risk for drug overdose deaths in the United States. So, prescription drug overdose is definitely a problem, and as most of you are aware, I think we do work, Public Health Law Program does work both for internal and external constituents. So, the Injury Center came to us and said, you know, we want to know about the legal landscape involved in prescription drug overdose. Now, when you look at the area of prescription drug overdose laws, there are so many different types of laws. So we really had to work with the Injury Center, look at the literature, look at the science out there to determine really what are the types of laws that we want to focus on. And I guess at this point, it's really important for me to thank a lot of people. There's Dr. Len Palazzi, Christopher Jones, Susan Hardman, from our team, Stacey Kirshner, Carla Chen, Rena Lieberman, our interns, Laurie Cuzzi and Catherine Claudfelter. I mean, this process has been a lot. I mean, we started this 2008-2009. We had our first, we issued our first set of laws in 2010, and then I've been working along with the team to update these laws since then. And what we're doing is we use Westlaw Next, and we're collecting all the statutes and regulations involved in the different areas. Now, like I said, it's a very broad area, so what did we focus on? Well, we realized based on brainstorming with the science, you know, looking at the science and everything, that there were 7 areas of law that we decided to focus on. And we walked through this process that you see on this slide here, and now we've been able to, I think, get a sense of the legal landscape in each of the 7 areas that we decided to pursue. So the 7 areas of law, what are they? So we picked physical exam laws, tamper-resistant prescription form laws, prescription drug limits, ID laws, immunity and mitigation laws, doctor shopping laws, and the regulation of pain management clinics. We're often asked, well, what about the promising legal strategy of prescription drug monitoring programs? Well, PDMPs are definitely a promising legal strategy. I think in terms of a decision that was made in 2010, that a lot of organizations are doing work in this area. And so rather than being duplicative, you know, we should spend our time doing things that are useful to the community in other areas of law. I think we're now at a point where maybe in the next year or so, we're probably going to have to think about, well, in D7 itself, should we be looking at other things? Should we retire some of these areas? Should we do more work in certain areas? So we're definitely at a critical, I think, juncture right now to, you know, next steps are to be determined soon. So let's really look at each of these areas. So to start off with here, I'm talking about physical exam laws. And this is an approach where we're trying to see, states are trying to ensure some sort of relationship between the practitioner and the patient, needing to come in to have a physical exam before a prescription is issued. Typically, these provisions go over the type of examination that are required and the applicable circumstances under which, you know, are we talking about all drugs? Are we talking about, you know, specific? So 41 states and D.C. have these laws as of December 4th, 2013. These are some examples from Indiana and New Jersey. As you can see, a physician shall not prescribe, dispense, or otherwise provide, or cause to be provided, any controlled substance to a person who the physician has never personally physically examined. Then in New Jersey, you see, what kind of physical exam are we talking about? They say it includes an assessment of physical and psychological function, underlying or coexisting diseases or conditions, and any history of substance abuse and the nature, frequency, and severity of any pain. So that's physical exam laws. Moving on to tamper-resistant prescription forms. So this is when you're regulating the actual prescriptions themselves, requiring, you know, doctors to use certain types of pads that have certain security features so that they're less likely, you know, to be altered or copied. So, you know, in the provisions, as you might expect, you find security features. Either sometimes it's a specific list of what you need to have, or, you know, general industry recommended features, you know, categories. Also applicable circumstances. You know, is this for, you know, are we particularly concerned about Schedule 2 that needs to have it, or is it all, you know, all controlled substances or all prescription drugs in your state? So 27 states in D.C. have these kinds of laws. As you can see here, this is a very good example of a very specific list that California provides. You know, needing to have your prescription forms for all controlled substances to have this sort of void written on, printed across your prescription. It needs to have a watermark, you know, the words California security prescription, chemical void protection so that you can't alter it by chemical washing. Very detailed, very specific, again, to ensure that these prescription forms are legitimate and cannot be copied or altered. Next, we have prescription limit laws, and that's really, looking at regulating prescription amounts. So we see it in the provisions, we see it in dosage units or time limits, things like hour supplies or day supply limits. 47 states and D.C. have these kinds of laws as of September 28, 2012. And here are some examples, one being of the day supply. No such prescription shall be made for a quantity which exceed a 30-day supply if the substance were used in accordance with the directions for use. That's New York, Rhode Island. Specifically for prescriptions in Schedule 3, you cannot write it for more than 100 dosage units, and not more than 100 dosage units may be dispensed at one time. Now, also, you know, another attribute to think about is sometimes they are specifically, these prescription amounts are for medical assistance programs. So, you know, if you're a part of your a special assistance programs within your state, they have, you know, these kinds of dose or time limitations on the amount of prescriptions, drugs that you can have. Then we have the area of identification laws, and this is basically where, you know, pharmacies use ID checks and records to keep track of the prescriptions being filled by each patient. So really, when you're going to the pharmacy, having to show an ID. The laws you see in terms of the provisions, either there are mandatory and discretionary provisions. You have things like the types of identification that you can provide to the pharmacist, and then also the documentation and reporting requirements for the pharmacist. So 25 states have these kinds of laws, and as you can see here, Michigan shall require positive ID when the pharmacist does not know. Again, shall being mandatory, whereas North Carolina, discretionary, they may demand, inspect, and record proof of ID. This next area is what we call state laws related to emergency prescription drug overdose. There are two categories, immunity as well as mitigation. And really, it's when state laws are trying to offer encouragement for the protection to those seeking help for the misuse and overdose that's happening. The person is not, in the case of immunity, a person is not held liable for something that the law would otherwise convict them of because of this policy choice. Where here, they're trying to save a life. And so here you can see 9 states have these kinds of law. Typically, it is in all 9 states, it's immunity from possession charges, just to make that clear. It's not any, Massachusetts, I think, specifically says actually that if it's related to trafficking or distribution, that's not, you're not immune from those charges, but you are immune from the charges of possession. Mitigation, again, refers to lesser punishment or sentence based on similar policy reason as immunity. Here you see 8 states have these kinds of laws. Great example here of Alaska. Mitigation, is available where the defendant is convicted of an offense related to controlled substances and the defendant sought medical assistance for another person who is, experiencing a drug overdose. Doctor shopping laws. So here you have 2 different categories, and this is really the practice of where a patient is going to multiple doctors to get, large quantities of prescriptions or drugs. And so that's known as doctor shopping. There's general doctor shopping laws and specific doctor shopping laws. So general is really a general anti-fraud statute where you're saying obtaining a narcotic drug, you're using deceit, misrepresentation, subterfuge, or concealing a material fact. Specific doctor shoppings, on the other hand, are very specifically, expressly state, that you're, it's unlawful when you're specifically withholding information from a healthcare practitioner about controlled substances or prescriptions that you've received from other healthcare practitioners. So all states have general doctor shopping laws, but specific doctor shopping laws, there are 20 states, Tennessee here being another example of specific doctor shopping law. And the last category, and just so you know, each of these were 50 state assessments. So we've gone through all the laws pertaining to each of the jurisdictions for each of these areas. So this is the last one. And this is an area where, this is where we're trying to address the problem of pill mills, locations where people can get a lot of drugs that are being improperly prescribed and used. These provisions typically go over state oversight, ownership, and operation requirements. 8 states, it was 3 states in 2010, 8 states as of September 2012, we're updating these. July 2013, there were 11 states. Typically, like you can see, you need to be, certified by the state. You have a medical director who's an owner. West Virginia, there's inspection. The office can come in and look at what's happening in your clinic. Those are the kinds of laws we're seeing in this area. Of course, we've come to a critical juncture. We can understand the legal landscape. So what? What are the impacts of the laws? And I think we're really at an interesting point now in time where we're starting to go down this path of evaluation because we know the laws now, so let's look at this other side. So the first, we've got one of the first studies here, July 2014, looking at Florida and what's happening. 2003-2009, high levels of overdose death rates. 2010-2011, a lot of different kinds of laws, pain management clinic laws, prohibition of prescribers from dispensing opioids in your office. And then you also had Operation Pill Nation, so raids were conducted, to the enforcement side of things also was going on. And so the study ultimately concludes that, pain management clinic laws are a promising intervention to limit prescription drug overdose deaths. We're seeing a lot more of these kinds of, we should be seeing a lot more of these evaluation studies. This is the first one. It's promising. We understand, though, in terms of there's so many different interventions that were occurring, to attribute it to specifically one kind of law is hard. So I think more rigorous evaluation is needed. I think we're on the right track. We're going to see more of this kind of work. Really, I think prescription drug overdose laws, we're going to see, you know, we've got the landscape, we're going down the evaluation, and hopefully we'll see a decline in the actual overdose, you know, death rates as well. So with that, I'm going to leave you with our state laws on prescription drug misuse website link. All of the results for all of the 50 state assessments, we have menus. They provide you with all the different kind of trends, more of the attributes, because I couldn't go over all the details today, with actual legal citations, so you can look up the laws. So that's on the first link. The second one is 2010. We have the Injury Center has an interactive map. The data is still from 2010, though, so if you want more 2012 data, please go to the menus, and, of course, contact us if you need any further information. Thank you.